Hi, everyone. Welcome to Nancy's Metaphysical World and More. My name is Nancy, and I host the show. And today we have a guest on that is one of my favorite topics, and I'm sure it's everybody else's favorite topic, too. The topic is going to be about UFOs. And Brent, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Nancy. I appreciate it. I always enjoy being on with you.
Well, you're very welcome. Now, Brent, before we really start, I should say before I start really asking you a bunch of questions and getting into it, would you please tell the listeners a little bit about who Brent is and what you do?
Okay, well, Brent is, I live in Tennessee, and I, since 1985, I work with the Tennessee Department of Correction. I manage a warehouse at a small state prison facility. That's my real daytime job. But one of my real passions, hobbies that became an obsession back in 1967 when I was just 14, became the subject, the UFO enigma. And it soon branched out and encompassed many other areas. And since also going back to about 1985, I've been working on a newsletter that's become an online magazine called Alternate Perceptions, which not only looks into the UFOs, but also paranormal phenomena, cryptozoology, some of these which I feel are interrelated topics as well. And I've also have two books out of Visitors from Hidden Realms and On the Edge of Reality. My magazine, Alternate Perceptions, is posted monthly online. It's free. We have book reviews and interviews and various features and things in there on different subjects. And everybody's encouraged to come and take a look.
And I've taken a look at it several times, and it's actually pretty good. It's very interesting, Brent. You have many topics on there. It's not just UFOs, but many topics of great interest, because there's many, many people out there who kind of look at all the phenomena and go, oh, no, these can't be possible. They're just got to be old legends or old tales. And you kind of break it down and get into it, pretty well, which is kind of interesting. Now, your search for UFOs, Brent, have you ever had the opportunity to actually see one yet?
Oh, well, I've seen what I couldn't identify. I mean, a UFO, unidentified flying object. They were lights at a distance. Of course, what I, as a ufologist, would desire to have would be an experience where I could be up close and personal with it and sort of kick its tires, so to speak, But I've not had that sort of encounter, but I've talked with quite a number of people who have had close encounters. And, of course, sometimes those close encounters aren't so pleasant, so maybe at a distance is better anyway.
Sometimes I would think that would be true.
Yeah.
Now, Brent, with the books that you have written, I have not actually had the opportunity to read them, but let's talk a little bit about the first one, Visitors from the Hidden Realm. When you wrote that, tell us a little bit about the book and what you based it on.
Okay, well, Visitors from Hidden Realms tried to take what I call a comprehensive global and historical perspective on the phenomena. Because the UFOs or UFO-type phenomena have been around for a very long time. There's a Reverend Barry Downing, a Presbyterian minister from New York State, who wrote a book, I think back in the 60s, called Flying Saucers in the Bible. And he's occasionally, I think, still doing lectures. I met him back in the 70s in Scranton, Pennsylvania. We were both doing a talk at the same conference. And very fascinating, knowledgeable gentleman. And he's written a number of articles for the MUFON UFO Journal. And researched a lot of the ancient biblical accounts and such, and made comparisons to the UFO phenomena that we talk about today. It's just a different frame of reference. And so I try to take a lot of data, the current data plus historical data, and make comparisons. A French-born scientist, astrophysicist, mathematician, Dr. Jacques Vallée, who I greatly admire and whose work, since I've been in the field, I have studied for years and years, and he wrote a book in 1969 that really opened my mind to the historical background of a lot of all of this, called Passport to Magonia. And it was a collection of over 900 cases from like 1868 to 1968 at that time of landings and entity encounters. And a lot of these, and then of course he also went back even further in a lot of what he wrote, but he had a catalog of cases. And, you know, there was, it's unbelievable when you look at it, but a lot of these are compared to what in ancient times would have been referred to as religious visitations, encounters with the little people, elementals, the jinn of the Muslim faith. And so I followed a similar formula or path in my own writing and, of this book, and tried to notice the comparisons and to search out what I think were some of the more deeper, more complex psychic elements and symbolic elements that are embedded within the phenomena. And, you know, of course, it's something that, it's a path I feel like I'm often just kind of lonely on a lot of times, because mainstream ufology doesn't generally recognize this particular approach. It's more about the nuts and bolts extraterrestrial hypothesis, but my early influences back in the 1960s, late 60s, were John Keel and Jacques Vallée and Brad Steiger, who really opened my eyes to, you know, they were the pioneers who explored the alternative theories, the idea of other dimensions, parallel worlds that might coexist with us, but in an unseen state. And so this is kind of what, you know, I pursue, and I interview different people and get their thoughts and what their experiences have been. In a nutshell, that's the first book there.
You know, which I think would be pretty interesting, because everybody's, you know, always wondering different questions about, you know, are there UFOs? If there are, how come they don't show themselves? Why is our government trying to hide them? You know, why are other countries more open to letting people know about UFOs? So, I mean, people have just tons and tons of questions going on out there, Brent. You know, my biggest question has always been why our government continues to try to cover up the idea of UFOs even existing, let alone being seen. What is your take on why our government really has a hard time opening that door?
Well, you know, what all the ufologists worldwide, I mean, there has been a ton of material that's been accumulated over the years, a mountain of evidence. Trying to make sense of it's the real challenge. The prestigious Flying Saucer Review that was published for years over in London, England, had contributors worldwide, and you could go to that magazine, and it was just an incredible collection of you know, reports and articles from a lot of the top researchers in the field, and the UFO field from all over the world. And so the phenomenon is global, and it's there's plenty of evidence. Unfortunately, you know, if any of these craft have been taken into the lab and they're there to be studied, then that's covered up. But I mean, it's obvious if anybody really objectively looks at the evidence and examines it openly and objectively, there is a ton of credible eyewitness testimony that it can be covered up, you know. And a lot of the people in the government that have said things that have been off, you know, off. I mean, a lot of times it's just people who are a spokesperson who really don't know, who are sitting in front of a camera, and they're just spouting what a lot of people who are in a skeptical frame of mind spout, you know. Well, if there's anything to it, you know, they would have landed on the White House lawn or something, you know. Well, they flew over the White House in 1952. There was mass sightings. They were tracked on radar. I mean, it came pretty close. I don't know really, you know, maybe the challenge for people, the government, to actually just be totally open with it is that what do you tell the public, you know, that you have something invading your airspace, they don't know what it is, and they can't, you know, it's something they, as a defense front line for your country, they can't really say that they could protect you from, because they don't know what it is that's invading their airspace, you know. And it's a pretty, you know, of course they routinely classify everything that's unidentified, that could be a possible foreign presence. So it's, a lot has been, I think, released. And then, of course, it's just hard to say what sort of a cover-up. I mean, I know that a lot of people think this the big cover-up. I think a lot of it is just mismanagement of information, and it looks bad, but I think a lot of the statements that have come from governments and such, they don't know what to do with it. It's kind of a boondoggle. The Air Force wanted out of the investigations business of UFOs and closed down Project Blue Book in 69. I really don't know what to say exactly, other than just that I'm just going to keep plowing into the data myself and continue to investigate, no matter what anyone from the military or government has to say, you know?
I see. To me, it would be just so simple for them to admit that, yes, they're there. Yes, we don't know about them. Yes, we're trying to learn about them. And we really don't know what to tell you at this point, but, you know, we have to agree that something's going on. To me, that would be so simple. And our government would actually look like a hero that way, rather than trying to cover up something that we know exists, because it's gone on through thousands and thousands of years here. And you can tell by any petroglyph that is out there, they always have some form of a spaceship or a stick figure with a helmet over its head, you know, something to indicate that we have not been alone here for several thousands of years.
Right. Well, some of that, you know, the people are going to, some of the intelligent people or the academic people are going to kind of process differently. They're going to say, well, some of those petroglyphs, they're portraying a shaman in a ceremonial outfit, a costume, and he just looks like a spaceman. And sometimes that may be true, but then again, some of this other stuff, you know, and the legends and the stories, and, you know, when you put it all together and you weed out the things that maybe aren't, and then look at the things that could be, I you know, it's still there. It's still very overwhelming and a very great challenge to science. Now, you know, just because our government has been sitting on maybe doesn't want to release all the information, certainly a lot of the Blue Book files are now open to the public, and I don't know how much more that there is, but there is, you know, when you have Edgar Mitchell, who was the sixth man to walk on the moon, saying he believes in UFOs, and Brian O'Leary, who was being groomed by NASA to go to Mars, and people like this who are open to the UFO phenomenon and the paranormal. And I just interviewed in my magazine astrophysicist from California, Dr. Bernard Heisch, who is open to the idea of other dimensions, other intelligences, to God. I mean, you know, these are people with scientific degrees and very credible and trustworthy. And they're saying the same things we are. It's just not everybody's on the same page, you know. And, of course, the UFO phenomenon, unfortunately, is such a controversial hot potato that a lot of politicians and people that want to keep, you know, look respectable to the public, they don't want to say much, I guess, because of the snicker effect, you know, that someone will laugh behind their back, you know, and they don't want to commit, you know, any kind of political suicide in the public eye. So they don't want to say too much. They're just very careful what they do say. And unfortunately, they really don't take time to really examine the evidence personally, and that's what it takes.
Yeah,
and of course,
sure.
That's what the whole disclosure thing is trying to do. But it's just an ongoing process. Eventually, one day we'll get there. But I think more and more, if you look at the public opinion polls, you'll see that it increases a little every generation. You know, the UFO enigma now is since 1947. We're going on 63 years of age as of June 24th, just around the corner. starting with the Kenneth Arnold sighting that kicked it off. Of course, it's much older than that, but that's when we really started talking about things called flying saucers and started to get some kind of concept of, or trying to get some kind of concept of, what is this in our skies?
Mm-hmm. And that we're not really alone. You know, it was really funny because when I was a child, they had that movie come out, The Day the Earth Stood Still, and they did a remake on it. But even back then, because when I was a kid, you know, that's been several years ago, you know, they were pretty close with what they depicted as to be what's going on today. And I always find it fascinating that the people who have been well above their time, basically, with things like that, how they would come up with that if, one, they hadn't seen one, or, two, maybe hadn't been part of it somewhere down the road. And so when that movie came out, a lot of people tend to panic. And then they had the radio one that also made more people panic, by Orson Welles. You know, so they had to come with these ideas from someplace. You know, you just don't sit down one day and go, oh, let's see, I'm going to dream up this silver object that I really don't know what it is, but I'm going to make a whole story out of it. So I always find it fascinating that far back in history that there have been things said, and for these people to come up with it, even like Star Wars, those movies were way ahead of their time as far as I'm concerned. But they're there. And now we're seeing a lot of those movies that the movie theater has portrayed to be, quote, fiction, sometimes be pretty real. And I think it, as time goes on, like you're saying, Brent, it will get more and more interesting to see what really is going on, because everybody's worried about the 2012 thing going on. So let's talk a little bit about that right now. Do you have a take on 2012 and what you think might be going on?
Well, basically, that, you know, they, just because that cycle ended on, you know, the winter solstice of 2012, to me doesn't mean that that's going to be this great end of the world. It's just a cycle in time, and something may significant may happen, but that doesn't mean that time is going to stop, that, you know, our world is going to end, as some people fear. That's just my take on it. I don't see any reason to panic.
I don't see any reason to panic. I mean, there's a lot of earth changes going on, but they've already started. See, because I've been told all along by my voices from the time I was a child, 2010, not 2012, that 2012 is just a part of everything going on from 2010 all the way past 2017, and then everything really starting to get back to normal from 2017 to 2050. So there's a big time frame there. Some of the other things that you've talked about in your magazine, like the Bermuda Triangle, that's always been another topic, very hot topic for people. What is your take on the Bermuda Triangle?
Well, there are mysteries there, and my co-editor, Greg Little, and his wife, Laura, they spend a great deal of time themselves down in that area. They go to the Bimini Road, the formation of rocks beneath the water there, not far beneath the water, just a few feet, that is kind of like a road when you look at it. And I have all the indications of being not just a natural formation of rocks, but deliberately placed there, including with these little anchor stones, that at one time that this was part of some kind of a pier or something, when the water table was lower. And they've been looking at that and other sites also, other walls, underwater walls and such. They've gone down and dived and taken pictures, and there's this, you know, contrary to what the skeptical geologists have said, there were prop stones and such under there. They were placed there. They weren't just natural. And it's amazing that, the geologist, one geologist who has been a real critic, Greg even offered to pay him his way from Miami to the site and go down and show him what he was talking about. And at that point, he wasn't interested. I mean, what more can you do? But there are a lot of, UFO-type things that have been reported, geomagnetic anomalies. There's something, electrical activity in the air that sometimes seems to form around planes and around ships. Maybe they cause almost like a St. Elmo's fire or like a strange fog that's reported too, and creates all sorts of disruption, electrical, magnetic functions of craft and such, and be responsible for some of these disappearances as well as who knows what else. There's all kinds of credible and strange reports. You have UFOs. You have even cryptozoology. Greg was surprised to find people who talked about Bigfoot on the islands and other strange creatures. So there's some weird stuff that goes on. But, of course, it's not the only place in the world that these weird things happen. But there just seem to be some places that it seems like there's more of it. Like you live in New Mexico now, not too far. Mm-hmm. The San Luis Valley, a lot of strange things goes on there.
A lot of strange things going all over the place. Like where I live, my office actually faces the mountain, which is east of the house. And I'm a very late person at night. I mean, sometimes I'm up until, 2-3 o'clock in the morning. But I always look up at the sky, because when the stars are out here, they're gorgeous. And when the moon is up, of course, it's real gorgeous, too. But sometimes there are some strange things that go on in the sky.
Uh-huh.
And, and I just sit and I watch them. I'm going, I wonder what that could be. And I don't have a telescope or binoculars, so I can't really figure it out. But one night I was sitting, and you'll love this one, because it took me totally off guard. It was probably about 3 o'clock in the morning, and I looked out my bedroom window, which again faces toward the mountains. And just above the mountain range was this huge, bright, white light. Now, it didn't move, and I'm going, well, okay, not a plane. It didn't change colors, so I thought, well, doesn't have any kind of blinking lights on it. And it just sat there. It was sitting there, just huge, big white light. And I'm going, now, I've never seen this light, this big white light before, all the time. Now, I've lived here for about a year. And I look out every night. And I'm watching this, and it's not moving. And all of a sudden, it starts shooting red lasers out from it. So, and then a few minutes after that, it just disappeared. But see, the thing is, it's behind this mountain range where I live is Kirkland Air Force Base. And they do all kinds of weird things over there, I'm pretty sure. So I don't know if it was them doing some kind of testing of something, thinking that nobody's going to see anything because it's 3 o'clock in the morning, or if it was something else, And so I'm very much into all this because I think there's so much more that's going to be discovered and so much more that people are going to have to admit to, whether they want to believe it or not. They're going to have to admit to it. So when I first moved in to New Mexico, there was this star, I'll call it a star for lack of a better word, that would not move, but it would change all different colors. And it would do that like for hours, and I would sit there and I'd look at it, see if it was still there, and it was still there. And that stayed by this house where we're at for probably 2 or 3 months, but now it's not there anymore. So I have no idea what that was either. But those kind of things go on a lot down here in New Mexico. And it has a lot of tales about this land in general. And so it's pretty interesting. But the energy is different than any other place I've also been. So I also find that pretty interesting. Now, you have talked to various people. And I know that you work with Sandy Nichols, which I've also interviewed. And he is one of the people that also does a lot of UFO things. So in the work that you've done with Sandy, can you tell the listeners, Brent, a little bit about some of the things that you guys have looked at or researched?
Okay, well, Sandy is, like myself, he's and yourself as well, he's open to a lot of range of phenomena. He's not just restricted to one little path. And recently we've been involved investigating haunted houses, which from the very beginning of meeting Sandy, I knew that he was, you know, not only an abductee from his description of what he's experienced, but, you know, I remember him telling about a being he saw that, you know, went through a solid wall, or how they would take him out of his, a number of times they would take him out of his bedroom and out to a craft, and he would see himself going toward a wall or the window, and he'd kind of close his eyes, getting ready for impact, and then he'd remember, oh yeah, they're going to just take me right through it. So, you know, I knew there were a lot of paranormal elements embedded within his own experiences. And anyway, he's, last few years, he's been very involved in investigating haunted houses and such. And so we've teamed up recently and investigated a number of places here in Tennessee, along with Brett and Gina Oldham, who live up in the Nashville area. And my wife and daughter have also been a part of these investigations. And part of it's been right here in Wayne County, and then part of it over in a place called Fayetteville over in Lincoln County, which is about 80 miles to our east. And you can get on Highway 64, anybody knows where that is, and just head straight east, and you're right there in downtown Fayetteville. We've gotten several dozen EVPs, electronic voice type phenomena, and with digital recorders, we've got a few photographs that can have some stuff we're kind of, you know, questioning that looks a little odd. Also we've done, Brett and Gina introduced us to an experience called the Ghost Box. Also it's called the Frank's Box, and it's about where you actually kind of do electronic communications. You attempt electronic communications with spirits, kind of using white noise like the old Rudolph experiments back in the 60s over in Europe. And but you do this with a radio, and this radio is constantly sweeping back and forth across the frequencies of the, in this case they use an AM because there's fewer channels. And you get, sometimes you get sentences or a brief word that just absolutely shouldn't be there. And yet it is. I know that Joan and Chandra, I think this was back early March, we were at Sandy's. And I wasn't actually there for this first session, but they did a ghost box session at that time. And Joan's brothers passed on, you know, they called him Jesse. And Jesse came through the ghost box, and Joan spoke up. Well, I know that was my brother. My brother's name, and then Joan. They were like speaking to her and saying Joan out of the box. And there were a number of things, you know, like wow, they didn't go expecting to be impressed, but they became impressed by the end of that, you know, that session. Both Joan and my daughter Chandra. And I've gotten to experience it myself now in Clifton and Fayetteville, and I was thinking the first session about, you know, communicating someone that I might have known in the field who passed on, and I didn't tell anybody. I was thinking who now, I was thinking maybe John Keel, who passed away last July 3rd. And who I had, you know, correspondence with, but going back to 1969. But later on, you know, they taped the session, and Brett is emailing everybody with tapes, audio tapes of different anomalies, and says, here's one here, sounds like a Joan Howard. Anybody know Joan Howard? Well, Joan Howard back in 1971, and she was up in her years at the time. She was a spiritualist medium / contactee that Brad Steig had written about in the Aquarian Revelation. She lived in Toronto, Canada, and I went up to interview her. And, you know, I'm thinking, there's a voice with Joan Howard on here? So I listened to it, and sure enough. So the next session, we were in Clifton, and I was asking about Joan Howard, and it came back that she was busy. But then I think about three times we heard John Keel coming over the speakers.
Mm.
And so we started asking John Keel questions. And someone had seen something like they'd heard a chopping sound coming from the same direction different times for years. And, of course, this is a way that, like, Bigfoot may communicate, is like hitting a tree with a stick or something. And it just so happened that there was someone there who had had a sighting very similar to Bigfoot. So Brett asked the question, John Keel, is there a Bigfoot, or what is causing this chopping sound? That was the first question. And a voice came back, it was me saying, a monster. And I looked up on the internet, I typed in, you know, Googled John Keel and monsters, and that was one of his expressions, you know, he talked about monsters, this, monsters, that. And so I sent it to Brett and Sandy and everybody. So there are things, you know, that's it's interesting. A lot of different little things, and Sandy was asking them, what am I doing right now? And earlier he'd been sitting on the floor and he was standing up. And more than once the voice came to the speaker, standing up or stood up, you know. And then you hear two voices that are saying, one says, I think one said sit, and another one says, I don't want to sit, you know, like they're arguing among themselves. But anyway, it's just a very interesting phenomenon. I've, you know, not experienced anything like this before.
You know, and it's funny because most people, when they talk about ghosts and things like that, Brent, they always relate to the night. Why is that? I mean, ghosts are around all the time. They don't just have to be around at night. But most of the time, that's when their presence is known, or that's apparently when we allow their presence to be known. So why do you think it's usually at nighttime that the ghosts or voices or whatever tend to come through?
Well, it may be a matter of more how we approach it than what, you know, what really is going on. I notice a lot of investigators, you know, it's lights out, like, you know, on Ghost Hunters. But I was just watching a thing on YouTube with some investigators out in California who were talking about that there's a lot of paranormal occurrences that occur in broad daylight. There's no need to go lights out. And another investigator said, well, I like to have my laptop going while I'm doing investigation, so this would be perfect if I didn't have to turn out the lights. But I do it for other people who are a part of the investigation who feel that they need to be in the darkness. And this one investigator said, but it was a proven fact that when you turn the lights out, people, when they hear a sound, they can't locate the source as well as they can if the lights are on. They become a little more disoriented. But anyway, there are evidence that maybe a lot of paranormal effects may increase around 3 o'clock in the morning. There's a more hypersensitivity of consciousness. But, I mean, beyond that, I don't think there's any reason not to just conduct investigation, do your EVP work with lights on. We've done it and on occasions recently and come up with strange whispers and things when we're just walking around and, you know, examining a place and we're talking among ourselves. And then when we play the audio back, we got voices that are saying things in between our conversations that shouldn't have been there.
Mm-hmm. Which I think would be fun. Out of all the times that you've been looking, you know, investigating things, Brent, has anything ever made you afraid or caught you so off guard that, you know, you're like, oh my God, type effect?
You know, I've had experiences that I thought would have made me afraid and didn't. I've not really, that I can remember right now. I remember feeling bad for one witness who was really, we were kind of on a stakeout, and there was this bright light close to the horizon that was seemed to be growing in intensity, and flickering all these different colors, and it really looked awesome. I really thought it was something. And I remember this woman who was just breaking down hysterically, "Brent, what have you brought here?" You know, you know, I guess she thought we were fixing to be abducted. But it turned out it was, you know, just, it was early morning, and it was just a natural planet, maybe Venus on the horizon. It was definitely, it turned out, it was not any spaceship or anything. So we were safe. I had been there in the skies for a long time, and nothing, you know, nothing bad was going to happen. So, but this was at a site, I guess, you know, maybe I should explain. This was in Maine, where I'm originally from, and there were a lot of strange things that happened at this site. And one night, I told these group of people that at 11 o'clock we were going to step outside and we were going to see a UFO and we were going to face a certain direction. Now, it wasn't one of those like I had hoped for where you could, you know, kick the tires. It was, you know, I wanted a disc-shaped domed craft. What we saw when we looked in that direction right at 11 was a beam of light coming up from behind some trees. It was a low overcast, and it was sort of a flickering light, pulsating, and it was just a beam that went up, hit it. You know, it wasn't one where you switched the light on, it was just instantly there like a normal beam. This one, you actually saw it going up, touching a cloud, and then it like retracted a light beam, slowly retracting back down to ground level behind the trees. And then we started seeing the same thing in other directions. There was myself and two other witnesses. So I guess maybe that's what, maybe there was a UFO in there somewhere involved, but I'd wanted to see a craft if possible rather than a beam of light. But anyway, it was kind of strange. And, that was a site where, I had a lot of psychic sensitivity. Mm-hmm. At that time, I had read a book that was talking about how to do psychometry, and so when one evening when we weren't trying to do EVPs or I was interviewing about something, I said, "Hey, I was just reading this thing on psychometry. Have you got something that's old that I could hold?" And it seemed like I was really very accurate. I've since read that sometimes people who normally aren't psychic can go to certain places where activity is going on, and suddenly they become a little psychic, or people who are like Sedona, people who are normally psychic can go to a vortex or, you know, certain site where there are these certain energies that may increase their abilities, and bam, they, you know, they're more psychic. Maybe, you know, you've noticed this yourself, but anyway, I was charged up for a while, it seemed, and I know sometimes people being around other psychics get charged up too, temporarily. And so, yeah, temporarily. And in fact, one evening, one of these people was from this site was visiting my home, and we were out in the driveway, and he says, "Right now, if you told Esther, family member is, that if you were Jesus Christ, she'd believe it. You know, she was that impressed with your reading." I says, "Well, I can't just make things happen." I said, "I can't just take my finger and point like this." And just as I did that, there was a bright flash right where I pointed. You know, and I have since wondered, well, was that just coincidence, synchronicity? Well, it happened anyway. And we got in a car and we drove down this road and up this hill to where we'd seen the flash. And I says, "Well, see, that tree limb just came down off that tree and hit that power line, and that's the flash." And, of course, he brought up and says, "Well, yeah, Brent, but what caused that tree limb to snap right then?" So anyway, but I'm not saying, you know, that I got that power, but there were just a lot of things that were very odd at that time, that, you know, synchronicities, readings that, you know, seemed to be right on the money.
It's funny because every house that I have lived in, there's a ghost. I don't know if it just comes with me when I go and I move or whatever the case may be, but and I'm not afraid of them because it's really funny because I'll be like, say, for example, curling my hair, and I know I'm the only one around, and I'll hear, "Hey, Nancy." It's like, okay. Hi, how are you today? And then it goes away. But one of the houses that we lived in was really funny because my boyfriend had a son and a daughter. And at the time when we were living together, and I had told him about what goes on, you know, don't get panicked or anything. If you're standing in the bathroom, for example, and something calls your name. And he just thought I was joking and laughed and said, oh, yeah, sure, okay. Because he wasn't into all the stuff that I'm into. But his son spent the night one night, and this is after I had told him. And my boyfriend and I were sitting in the living room watching television, and his son was in his bedroom, and all of a sudden his son comes running out going, "Hey, Dad, what do you want?" Now, Dean had not said a word. And I'm sitting there, I just took a pillow and put it over my face because I just wanted to burst out laughing, going, ha ha, see, I told you. But I couldn't because, you know, I didn't want his son to get panicked. So Dean looked at him and said, "No, I didn't call you." He goes, "Yeah, Dad, I heard you. You said, hey, Duder, come here." And he goes, "No, Dina, I didn't call you. And I'm just dying sitting on the couch with this pillow on my face, you know." And so his son goes, "Well, oh, okay, Dad," and goes back in his bedroom. I took the pillow off, and I said, "Did you hear that?" He goes, "No, he's just pretending." I said, "No, he isn't." So, but that's okay. And then his daughter stayed with us once, and I left to go to work real early in the morning one day, and Dean had left to go to his job, and she was supposed to be getting ready to go to school. And I didn't get home until like after midnight. And I get home, and she meets me at the stairs. She goes, "Nancy, can I talk to you for a minute?" I said, "How come you're not asleep?" "I can't." I go, "Well, why not?" She goes, "Is there a ghost in this house?" I go, "Well, why are you asking, Brandy?" She said, "Strangest thing happened to me, Nancy." She said, "I was sure that Dad left, and I'm pretty sure that you left, too." And she said, "I was getting ready to walk out of the bedroom, and her dad didn't put a door up yet, and she just had like a curtain over it." And she said, "I went to reach for the curtain to move it open, and I heard, hey, Brandy." And she said, "I looked," and she said, "I didn't say anything." And she said, "So I kind of went to move again, and it was louder. Hey, Brandy." And so she said, "That really scared me, so I went and I jumped back in bed." She said, "And I've never left to come outside the bedroom now until you're here." I said, "Yeah, well, there's this thing about wherever I go, there's usually a nice ghost, you know, that greets you, says, hi, how are you doing, things like that. Just say hi back. Then they'll go away and leave you alone." She goes, "I thought I was going crazy, Nancy." I said, "No, it just happens all the time." You know, so, you know, those things just happen. But yet people want to say, oh, no, this is just in your mind. But, you know, things like that's been going on for me forever. And I think it's kind of funny how some people will get, you know, a word or two from something that's not there and try to deny it, thinking, nah, I'm just playing games with myself or I'm just hearing things, you know, in my own head. And I think it's funny how people tend to do that. So your magazine and stuff, Brent, is a good way for people to read other people's stories and see really what's going on and that they're not alone with some of the things that happened to them. So that's very, very important. Now, your second book that you have here, On the Edge of Reality, let's talk about that a little bit. What prompted that book?
Okay. That book, I have a friend who's a retired psychiatrist I've worked with for quite a number of years. We've corresponded, and this is someone I could converse with on a level that, you know, we could talk about anything. He was actually a paranormal researcher prior to actually getting into the UFO phenomena back in the, I think back around 1968. He just happened to interview some UFO witnesses. He thought that would be an interesting article. He wrote it, and he put it out there for people to read and planned to be done with it. But my understanding is that John Keel saw the article, thought it was great, contacted him and said, hey, we got many more cases to look into, and they also involve the paranormal element. So Dr. Swartz got interested, and I met Dr. Swartz through another person who was having experiences and who also had become a researcher. And so one thing led to another. He wrote a book called UFO Dynamics, which I have a chapter in because we worked together on a case, an abduction case up in Maine that involved many different paranormal elements. And so he has always, over the years, doing alternate perceptions, and he helped. He actually, he knows so many people in the paranormal UFO field and said, hey, you know, you need to do a book on interviews. So last year, Tim Beckley had contacted me. He's a longtime ufologist going back to the 50s. He used to do the newsstand publication UFO Universe, and he's over what they call global communications, and he publishes a lot of books. And he reads my magazine, and he said, Brent, why don't you do a, you know, all these different interviews you've done over the years, put them together and put it in a book form, and let's put it out there. And, of course, I had already been encouraged a number of years by Dr. Swartz to do this very thing, so I agreed to do that. And so that's where that came from. It's mainly a book of interviews. I tried to, you know, put a little commentary with some of it, so, you know, it there'd be a little more, some other features in there, too, with it. But it's basically a book of interviews we've had with different key researchers and witnesses that we've interviewed over the years. And it presents a, you know, a variety of different angles, the UFO, the spiritual, paranormal, Bigfoot. We've got all of it in there. It's you know, pretty good book, I think.
Again, it would be very interesting. Where can people get your books at if they want them?
Well, they could look them up on Amazon. They're there. And they'd be on the Edge of Reality is the book that was published last year. And then the Visitors from Hidden Realms was actually back in 2004, but it's still on Amazon. They could also go to my website, www.mysterious-america.net. And by the way, one great honor that I've had recently was the I attended, of course, I was back in 2005, I was one of the speakers at the Edgar Cayce Foundation's ARE, Association for Research and Enlightenment, at their international headquarters in Virginia Beach, Virginia. And I was attending a local ARE conference that one of the directors of ARE was in from Virginia. He was up here in Montgomery Bell State Park back in November of last year. And he approached me, said they were doing another conference. He wanted me to be a speaker again, and also he wanted to name the conference after my book. So the conference is entitled Visitors from Hidden Realms, and then they added UFOs, crop circles, and extraterrestrial encounters. And that'll be November 12th through the 14th. And they can, you know, people can get more details by going to their website, www.edgarcayce.org, and look up the conference calendar there. And so anyway, that's sort of developed there.
Well, that's a pretty good thing. That's big compliment, I would think.
Yeah, very, very much so. Feel very honored, really. And I got to invite a couple of the speakers, Nancy Talbert, who I think you've done a show with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's into crop circles, and then Bill Burns of the UFO Hunters, and they're also going to have Freddie Silva, who's also very involved with the crop circle phenomena, and of course Stan Friedman, nuclear physicist, well-known UFO author and investigator. So anyway, that's those are the details.
I've interviewed the other one with the crop circles, too. I interviewed him.
Oh, okay.
He was pretty interesting. Now, would in your goal, let's put it this way, because I know you've already done a lot of things, so what would be the highest form of achieving whatever goal you want to reach through your investigations? What would that be?
Oh, goodness. That's the highest goal. I've been thinking of being invited to speak at the ARE conference and to have the title named after my book is higher than I already expected to go, so I'm not even sure. I did this for years without any recognition, without doing a book, without, just quietly working along the sidelines. I never even knew if I was going to write a book, so I just wanted to, investigate, research, try to find answers, and try to work with people who were sort of like-minded and see if we could, get some recognition, some results, help to increase public awareness. That's really all I want. I would love to be able to afford to do something like this full time, but this sort of thing doesn't really pay that well.
At least not yet. How's that? Not yet.
Not yet.
As it opens up further, you just might be surprised here, Brent, and never know what might happen.
Oh, well, we can always hope.
That's right.
But I'm getting close to retirement now, so I'm not going to worry about it too much.
That's okay. Now, we only have probably about maybe, let's say, 3 minutes left.
Oh, wow.
I know time goes by real fast. In that three minutes, you have talked about Native American Indians and that you really like to talk to them and listen to them. What's one of the biggest things that you have learned from talking with the Native Americans?
Well, they have, because they have legend stories about the star people, star visitors, and some of them also talk about the Bigfoot and about, and some of them are open to the idea of gateways or other dimensions. Very much so. Some of them are more open to it than a lot of the mainstream ufologists. It's something that I think a lot of the ancient cultures, Aboriginal, the medicine people of many different cultures had a lot of these stories. We know that this African shaman that told similar stories and other in Australia and such, but of course, the Native Americans are much closer to us, and we can find out a little more because, like you live in New Mexico, and I know that that's the land of enchantment there, and there's all sorts of Native American background influence there. And, I have a special place in my heart and respect. My wife is part Native American. We've done sweat lodges and interacted with a lot of people of Native American background. I always try to keep my eyes and ears open, and to try and learn. And, I try to keep my mouth shut and just listen a lot,
That's probably a good thing.
Yes, because I have noticed some investigators, they call themselves investigators, but they make the mistake of going on an investigation. Instead of doing an investigation, they do a conversation. They get to talking and telling the witness all this stuff about all the things they've done and whatnot. And the poor witness doesn't have an opportunity to tell much about what they saw and experienced, And,
mm-hmm.
and in a way, of course, they're kind of indoctrinated what this person believes. And sometimes they're not wanting to tell because they think, well, this person doesn't believe in certain things that I was going to tell them, so... That's happened. Jacques Belli investigated the case. It's described in his book, Confrontations, I think it's titled, where he went and interviewed a witness who told some different details than what was in the published account by the investigators. And he says, why didn't you tell him that this UFO went right through these solid trees rather than just flying by them and shaking the trees? And he said, well, I could tell that from what they told me that they wouldn't have believed that, so I didn't tell him that particular detail. He also said that a strange form appeared by his bedside. He didn't tell him that either. Mm-hmm. So how often does this sort of thing happen? The investigator goes and, runs their mouth and rather than just listening, what sort of details do they miss sometimes?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which I think is very interesting. But we are out of time, but can you give out your website one more time, please?
Oh, absolutely. It's Alternate Perceptions is the magazine, and it's at www.mysterious-america.net.
Brent, it's been a pleasure having you on again and talking with you again. And have to bring you to New Mexico so you can do some investigation here.
Well, I've been there once, and it's a beautiful state.
Yeah, it is. Anyway, thank you very much for taking the time, Brent, and we will talk to you again.
Okay, take care. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you, the listeners. May God bless you. Have a great week, and take care. Bye now.